An evening of lively, smart conversation and jazz. Join me, John Williams, for a live taping of the Mincing Rascals podcast, Robert's Pizza, and Jazz, Wednesday, June 12th, 6 to 8 at Winter's Jazz Club in Streeterville. Tickets at WGNRadio.com/rascals.
By the way, a couple more athletes who became politicians. Jack Kemp says 224 was my congressman. Arnold Schwarzenegger was the governor of California. And more than a couple of you reminded me, Bob Thomas, the former Bears place kicker, was an Illinois Supreme Court justice. Sitting next to me is a guy that wants that seat, too. I don't mean as a kicker for the Bears.
No.
Could you be a kicker for the Bears?
I don't think so.
Were you an athlete? Did you play
some
ball? Yes,
I played high school football at Kelly High School. But that was the extent of it. And then, you know, just out in the backyard with all my friends.
A little sandlot football.
Yeah, a little sandlot.
We're talking to Democratic State Appellate Justice Jesse Reyes, who is running for the job as an Illinois Supreme Court Justice. Joy Cunningham is there now. She was appointed. She's running for retention, if you will. You are running for that seat as well, is that right?
Right, yeah. So she's not necessarily running for retention. She was appointed temporarily to the seat, so she has to run like I have to run for the vacancy.
What's your background? You've been 27 years on the bench, right?
Yes. So I've had the opportunity to serve as an associate judge, a circuit court judge, and now as an appellate court justice. When I first got on the bench, I told the chief judge if he ever needed anybody because they died, retired, called in sick, or on vacation, that I'd be happy to, you know, fill in. And so for the first few years while I was an associate judge, I had my robe in the trunk because I was traveling around the county, sitting in a variety of different assignments, which I enjoyed. It was a great experience.
Never thought about it that way. Like, we need an umpire for a game or a doctor because somebody doesn't have a doctor over here. Maybe we need a judge, and you were ready to roll.
I was ready to roll.
You had your gear in the car and were ready on assignment.
Right, no matter what the assignment was. You know, so I had an opportunity to sit in a variety of different assignments. I sat virtually in all the branch courts in Cook County, in domestic violence court, and then I volunteered to serve on the Chancery's mortgage foreclosure and mechanics lien section at the height of the economic crisis.
So you've done civil and criminal work then?
Yes.
As well. Do you have a preference in that regard?
No, I really don't. I mean, you know, it's nice to be able to preside over both type of cases. So I really don't have a preference one way or another.
What made you decide to run for this office?
Well, you know, I decided to run for this office because I think that I bring a voice to the court that is needed. The court has done some good things along the way, but I think it could be better. So I've always been someone who has been aggressive and progressive in terms of creating access to justice. I've done that throughout my entire career and various assignments that I've sat in. And I also, you know, bring a sense of access to justice in terms of trying to make things more transparent for the public, because I believe that the courtrooms belong to the people. They don't belong to us.
You think that those should be televised?
Well, that's a decision for the Illinois Supreme Court, and we'll wait till I get there and be able to make that determination.
I think they should be televised. We at least have live audio of the U.S. Supreme Court now.
Yes.
I don't know that we even have that for the Illinois Supreme
Court.
Well,
yeah, we do have audio and video of the oral arguments before the Illinois Supreme Court, and with regards to the appellate courts, we do have audio. So this way the public can go onto the court's website if they like, and to also try to hear in our cases, you know, on the appellate court case, to hear what happened during oral arguments. And then on the Supreme Court, they could also do the same thing, but they also get to see the justices and the attorneys that are making the arguments before the Illinois Supreme Court.
You described yourself, used the word progressive just a moment
yes.
ago. What does that mean?
It means that, you know, if I see a situation that needs to be addressed, that I will try to take action towards doing that. So when I was an associate judge, you know, there were people that were coming into traffic court that you could tell that had some language impairments. So I and other individuals at the first district in traffic court, we created a DVD that was informational DVD that was in different languages like Spanish and Polish, which informed the public of their consequences of driving under the influence, and then also of their rights, what rights they had, and then also the consequence not only to the individual that is accused of having driven under the influence, but, you know, how it impacts their family and their employers as well.
that was an informational video for the person who's being charged with the crime.
Not just for the person being charged for that. It was for the general public. In fact, during during the time that I was there and we were putting this together, the Secretary of State worked with us to try to distribute the DVD around the state. They had it in their office facilities, and then they also loaned it out to insurance companies so they could show it in the insurance company lobbies, so people could at least understand, you know, what they were dealing with when they were driving under the influence.
I don't think anybody would argue with that, although the word progressive is a funny one these days.
Yeah, I guess. But, I mean, the way I kind of look at it is, like, when I was in the foreclosure call, again, you know, there was individuals who were coming in that were not represented, couldn't afford representation, and they were, you know, against attorneys that were representing the lenders. So in order to create a even playing field, establish a program to help the individuals that were unrepresented by counsel, and as a result of it, I think we were able to save some homes during the crisis.
I believe a lot of Chicagoans feel that the justice system is failing the law-abiding citizens, though, that we aren't harsh enough on criminals. We aren't either quick enough to prosecute and jail them, or we don't keep them in jail long enough. What do you think about that?
I think that, you know, we are, it's, you know, the system of justice is a system that's always, work in progress. And, you know, for example, with the Safety Act, I mean, that was something that's been implemented, and it's a work in progress itself. And it's trying to, you know, reform a system that people had felt for many years was unfair. So I think that it definitely helps with regards to, you know, the criminal system. Overall, I understand how people can have a lack of confidence in the court system. Unfortunately, you know, throughout the country, you know, we read about things that happen in the court system. You know, U.S. Supreme Court. You know, there's questions about lack of transparency and conflict. And right now, even in our own state, we're dealing with a lack of confidence with regards to the issue about, you know, former Alderman Ed Burke, who got to retain his license because the Supreme Court justices were conflicted in terms of what to do in the case. As a result of it, he by de facto gets to keep his law license, whereas yeah. Others in the past have been able to have not been able to retain their law license.
Should Clarence Thomas recuse himself from questions about Donald Trump's eligibility?
I think if there's ever a conflict, whether actual or perceived conflict, judges and justices should always recuse themselves. You know, one of the problems is...
So that would be a yes.
Yeah, well, yes.
Because regardless of how fairly he's going to judge it, the perception is that he can't because of his wife's activities and, for that matter, because of his activities.
Yeah, well, here's the problem is that sometimes the perception of a conflict is more damaging than an actual conflict because it leaves people to speculate. Why isn't he or why isn't she recusing themselves? So I think that's important for people that sit on the bench to be open and transparent in terms of any possible conflicts. In this way, the public has confidence again in its justice system.
You mentioned the Safety Act. Did you have a chance to weigh in officially on no cash bail?
Well, you know, when the Supreme Court found that the act was constitutional, I was the executive chair of our division in our court, sort of like the presiding judge of the appellate court. And so what I did is I brought all the stakeholders together, state's attorneys, public defenders, the court reporters, and the clerk's office, and all the presiding judges in Cook County, and said, okay, well, this is a system that, we, you know, whether you like it or not, we have to work with. So let's dive in and see how we could do it in a way that it's going to be practical, efficient, and effective. And we did come up with a lot of reforms that ultimately the Supreme Court did incorporate as a result of the meetings that we had.
And you support it?
I'm a judge. I have to follow the law. I have to follow the Constitution.
Plenty of sheriffs and district attorneys say they won't.
Well, that's up to them. I mean, I'm a judge, and I am bound by the code of ethics and my oath to follow the law.
As are they, but and I won't quibble with the point because, of course, what you're saying makes sense. But how would you have voted on that had you had an opportunity to?
Well, I think what I would have done is because there are difficulties with the act. I think I would have probably voted to send it back to the legislature because, you know, it's working pretty well here in Cook County. But outside of Cook County, there's still a lot of difficulties, a lot of problems with the process that has been created. And I think since the legislature were the ones that drafted the act, that, you know, it would be incumbent upon them to kind of work in those various difficulties that we're all dealing with right now.
Well, the process that's been created is that people are released unless a judge says they need to be held, but cash will not be a qualification to get released.
Well, there are instances where cash is still permitted.
Go ahead.
You know, so that's what I mean is everybody has the assumption that everybody's going to be released. But that's not the case. That's not what is exactly happening.
I'm sorry. When is cash a requisite to be released in Illinois?
Depends on the charges. So the state's attorney implements the charges. All right. And if there's a charge, let's say that's not a felony, but it's a misdemeanor, and in that case, the counsel can submit to the court that there's an opportunity here to pay cash. So it's not totally. Where you just go in and just say, well, you know, I want to be released or detained, or we want this person to be detained because...
Okay, but my question is this. What's your assessment of the Safety Act overall? We were warned by several state's attorneys here in Chicagoland that it'd be mayhem in the streets. Have we seen that this has worked well, or... is it more dangerous because some of these people are released?
All right, so I can only go by what is happening here in Cook County. All right, and I know I've read a lot of the reports as to outside of Cook County, and that's one of the things that your listeners should be aware of, that it's being implemented differently here in Cook County as it is outside of Cook County. In Cook County, it's basically a motion form, so if someone wants to appeal the decision of the trial judge, it's basically done in a motion form. They submit a memorandum and any other information that they feel is pertinent for the appellate court to consider. But in other areas of the state, it's done differently. So, you know, I can't, opine on, you know, how it's working.
What's your assessment of Cook County?
So far, from what I could see, it's there are bumps, but it's working effectively.
It's 11:47 on WGN. We're visiting with Democratic State Appellate Justice Jesse Reyes. He's been on the bench for 27 years. He is now running for Illinois Supreme Court. A couple of things I teed up before the break I want you to address, but I know you also want to touch on a point that you alluded to, and maybe we didn't expand on, and that was when you were talking about transparency and how it impacts the likes of an Ed Burke or other members of maybe the city council. What's the point you're making there?
That, we need to be, and not only just the Illinois Supreme Court, but, you know, all courts, we need to be open and transparent in terms of how we're conducting ourselves. Because, again, you know, the public has only a limited view of what the judiciary does. In fact, some people don't even know what the judiciary does, which is kind of unfortunate. But that's a subject for another matter in terms of civics. So I think that when we do act, and unfortunately when we do act in the manner that currently is going on with regards to former Alderman Ed Burke's license, the media draws attention to it and creates a lot of speculation. And, you know, that's what the media is supposed to do.
He's been found guilty. Are you suggesting that he should not be able to practice law?
Well, you know, the Illinois Supreme Court is the one that grants the privilege of giving someone a license to practice law, and it's clear that if you're a convicted felon, that you know you cannot practice law, and particularly in this case where his case is still pending, he hasn't been sentenced and everything else. The ARDC has presented a complaint, and the Attorney Registration Commission has presented a complaint to the Supreme Court, and it was incumbent on the Supreme Court to act upon that complaint. And it has, on other occasions, you know, recently with some public officials who have lost, you know, were lawyers and then lost their licenses. But here, four out of the seven felt that they were conflicted, and therefore you know, they could not act upon the request from the ARDC. And so de facto, he gets to keep his law license. And so
he's probably not going to practice much law, but well, he still has his law license. Our Supreme Court did not take his license away?
Our Supreme Court did not take his license away.
I don't exactly understand that. What was the conflict for them?
while they haven't revealed what the conflict is or who recused themselves from not acting on this, which, you know, it is a judge's right not to. It's an sort of a rule that you can't, you don't have to say why you're recused, you also don't have to indicate which cases. I mean, but there are instances where the Supreme Court has, for example, one case involving pensions, the issue of pensions. Justice Freeman, when he was on the court, recused himself. Justice Ann Burke refused to recuse herself from that case. And so that became part of public
She
did not recuse herself.
Even though her husband was maybe in line to enjoy a public pension, right?
Correct.
So maybe she should have recused herself.
Well, that was the question.
You know, about Ed Burke, I think the issue for a lot of us, too, is should members of the city council be able to take jobs that actually impact the government of the city outside of their official capacity? I don't know if that's something that a judge would consider, but that, to me, is a conflict of interest.
Right, and that issue may come up in front of the appellate court and the Supreme Court. I know currently there are suggestions about legislation within the city council to try to prevent that from happening. I don't know where it's at in terms of.
Do you think that's constitutional to deny somebody a private practice job if they are a public official and there's a perceived conflict?
If there's a perceived conflict, I think, number one, I think that's something that the public official has to deeply consider. Whether it's constitutional or not, I don't know. I don't think there's any reference with regards. I mean, there are certain instances where certain public officials should not.
I guess what I'm wondering is, what if there was a law that said you couldn't do that, and a person might say that you can't, you know, deny me the privilege of private employment? Let's not dwell on that. I'm creating cases that aren't important right now, or at least aren't before a judge. But what is your take about right to life issues as a Supreme Court justice here in Illinois?
Well, you know, we have a right to life here. I mean, we've had legislation that's been passed and signed by the governor. We also have the Hope Clinic case that provides that, you know, the an individual in the state of Illinois can choose their health care choices. They can make their own choices with regards to health care. So I think, you know, in terms of following the law, and Illinois is pretty solid in that area in terms of right to life or you know, health choices. There are some areas in the state that I'm, you know, I'm aware of that are trying to create like sort of little islands within the state to try to prevent that from happening. Danville is one of them in terms of trying to establish a municipal code. So it's an issue that's going to be coming up in front of the Illinois Supreme Court.
You tell us how you would feel about that?
Well, I think I have to follow the law. And the laws right now in the Constitution provides an extensive right of privacy. So as a justice on the Supreme Court, following the Constitution and following the law in you know, in the state of Illinois, depending on what happens with the municipal code. I mean, right now at this point in time, it's not in front of the Illinois Supreme Court, so I don't want to give an opinion as to how I personally would
You rule. Told me you wouldn't reveal your detailed thinking on that. I won't press you on that, and I have just a little more than a minute left.
Okay.
Do you think that our courts got it right about barring the sale of some weapons and ammunitions and accessories?
It's the law of the land.
I think we should follow that.
Right.
Would you have voted the way the courts have voted on that so far?
Again, I would follow the law. I mean, I can't personally give an opinion, I know you...
You can't?
No, I can't personally give an opinion on a case that may still come in front of us. You know, the issue of Second Amendment...
But I would like to know what your disposition on that is if I'm going to vote for you. I want somebody who's going to make it, just as a for instance, easier to own a gun in Illinois. And now these people are restricting my right to bear arms. You might have to weigh on that. What's your thought about that?
My thought is that, again, I would follow the law. It depends on the facts and the evidence that's presented. I can't just generically say I believe that everybody should carry guns unrestricted, because the case that may come in front of us may be something completely different.
You are Latino or Hispanic? How do you describe yourself?
I'm Latino.
And didn't you say on the campaign trail that maybe we should have somebody with your ethnic background on the court?
Yes. Yes. I believe that our courts should be diverse. I think that diversity is an important aspect of our judicial process, and in particularly on the Illinois Supreme Court. I believe that we need to have diversity.
Jesse, it's nice to meet you in person. Thanks for coming to our studio.
Oh, my pleasure.
Today.
Thank you.
Good luck to you. That's Democrat State Appellate Justice Jesse Reyes running for State Supreme Court.